Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're joined by Dr. Ken Menges, who talks about the dangerous ritual of hazing. There are laws against hazing, but it continues to happen on sports teams, on college campuses, and even in workplaces around the world. Dr. Menges explains why it exists and how to help stop it. Up next is CNN movie critic Gray Drake, who talks about the summer's hottest movies to check out and which one may be the biggest flop. We then wrap things up with barbecue expert Derek Riches and how to kick up your summer grilling experience with cool tips and tricks.
Capture your need for sound.
The practice of hazing is a very dangerous endeavor, and even though there are laws against it, it continues in many parts of the world, oftentimes resulting in serious injury and even death. To give us a good understanding of what hazing is and the dangers behind it is forensic psychologist Dr. Ken Menges, who himself was a victim of hazing in a fraternity as well as in the military. Dr. Menges, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. I'm pleased to be here.
Now, Dr. Menges, can you explain, I guess, the culture of hazing and why it exists on, you know, sports teams, university campuses, the military, and even, I guess, some places of work?
Certainly. Hazing is a ritualized way of giving someone else a hard time. Sometimes it goes overboard, where the individual who is the victim of hazing may be physically harmed or emotionally harmed by the antics of the group that is behind it.
Why do you think hazing exists, and what are the criteria for this practice to flourish in certain situations and not in others?
Well, I think it exists as a way of bonding. I think that it may have had and still has some innocence involved with it as a way for a group to have a new member join, but not just to be able to walk into the group without some sort of test of endurance. And what happens is sometimes those tests of endurance take on very suspicious qualities of people wanting to do harm or wanting to hurt the individual. Sometimes it's rather innocent, where the hazing might ask the person to do a volunteer task or to be helpful to someone else who is in need. But often it becomes more hurtful, where the person has to do embarrassing acts or put up with verbal insults, or as in the case of Mike Champion, suffer a physical assault.
And can you explain that case, Dr. Menges, the Champion case? I know it was an incident that happened in Florida, I believe, in a band member situation.
Yes, apparently the band has had a history of hazing, where they've asked the members who are joining the band to walk down an aisle in which he is or she is pummeled, physically assaulted by the other members. And there was a contagion effect. That is, the other band members went overboard. Instead of just razzing, or instead of just playfully having the participant, Mike, welcome to the group, he was physically assaulted to the extent that it actually killed him.
Wow. And I wanted to ask you about, I guess, the evolution of hazing. Like, was it ever, you know, a place where, like you said, it can be quite innocent? And in your estimation, you know, has this evolved to a bad place, I guess?
Well, I think that sometimes what happens is that the person who is joining the group may be seen as someone who is really not wanted, so that the hazing takes on a more vicious quality. In other instances, the group may be struggling with their own identity, and they want to make sure whoever participates in the group will honor their code, their secrecy, their approach to how it is that they are seen by others. And so they make that hazing more harsh, so that the person realizes that they could actually be harmed, not only their reputation, but physically, if they were to act outside of the group and reveal their secrets.
And are there any forms of hazing, in your view, that are acceptable? Like, for example, you know, like you said, doing the charity event, or maybe just taking it to the step of having their head shaved and maybe dyed a certain color? Or do you think that even these innocent acts can then lead to more serious offenses and get out of control?
It's a question about whether or not there's anyone monitoring the hazing, whether or not a group of the leaders has said, okay, will this cause irreputable harm to the new inductee? Or will it be seen of as a way to welcome them? And I believe that the leadership has to take charge, has to take leadership responsibility to see whether or not the actions that they're wanting to infer, instill, and act on are not vicious, are not harmful in the long run.
Joining us on the show right now is forensic psychologist Dr. Ken Mangus. Make sure to check him out, drmangus.com. Dr. Mangus, is hazing more male-dominated, or are females getting just as involved?
Oh, I think both genders do. You know, there are female sororities and there are male fraternities. Female sororities typically, and I'm generalizing here, are more involved with doing some kinds of acts, whether or not it be charity or dressing in a particular costume or participating as a volunteer, being a little sister to another member of the group, and doing things that would be allowing the pledge to take on responsibility that the group itself honors. However, female groups can be as physically as violent as male groups can be.
Do you think that, you know, depending on how large the group is, whether it's male or female, this can make the situation worse? Because I'm not sure if like a mob mentality plays any part in all of this.
Oh, I think it does. I think that the larger the group, the greater likelihood that a contagion effect, where if it gets out of hand, it's more difficult to control. So I think that that can occur. And again, depending upon the level of secrecy that's involved, the level of leadership that is involved will all affect how a new pledge will be welcomed realistically into the group.
And are most, you know, hazing rituals ripe to escalate to serious injury or even death? Or, you know, I guess maybe the more innocent ones don't, but I guess I'm wondering what the threshold is that leads to bad things.
I think that what seems to be present is alcohol will lead to bad things when there is a consumption of alcohol, because it's led to 96 male deaths and 8 female deaths over the last, I believe it was about 10 years in which the information has been collected. And alcohol has been the significant variable that has led to death.
And do most hazing incidents happen on, you know, college campuses, or are, you know, teenagers and high schools subject to it as well, just as much?
Oh, high schools and the military, wherever there are cliques or groups, there is the possibility of hazing.
With regards to military hazing, that seems like that's really ripe for bad things to happen there because of the, you know, just that sense of the testosterone, maybe that's all part of that.
I think so. You know, there's a power, there's a machoism that takes place within male groups, and there is an endurance that's demanded of the pledge. There's a vulnerability that takes place because it's, again, behind closed doors. It's kept secret so that the person feels any embarrassment or being ostracized if they admit to being harmed by the event, or that they are less of a man if they complain about their being hurt.
Is hazing in the military a tactic that's even used by the superiors? Because I'm assuming that probably a lot of their superiors know this is going on, like especially with the not being weak thing and wanting them to prove themselves.
I don't doubt that there is a complacency and a understanding that those kinds of things take place. I don't know that they necessarily are leading it, but they allow it to take place.
Joining us on the show is forensic psychologist Dr. Ken Mangus. Make sure to check him out, drmangus.com. How do you feel about, you know, most parents? Do they know that this is going on, or is it a very secret type of activity that is kept away from them?
Well, I think when the child discloses that they have been harmed or hurt, or they're feeling as though they're being excluded, that the parent will act in a responsible manner and that they will complain to the school authorities. And it turns out that the school authorities, when it is that it's investigated thoroughly, will find that there's been some other initiating event. So it's not that the child is innocent, but rather that they have felt that the hazing has gone overboard, has gone over the top. And my guess is that the child who felt that it's gone over the top didn't recognize their own involvement in that. Now, it's not always the case that they were involved, but we have to look beyond just the accused saying that they were innocent in all of that.
Now, regarding hazing on sports teams, do you believe that coaches actively let this go on? Do they view it as, again, part of the process of joining the team and becoming a solid member that is trustworthy?
The answer is yes. Apparently, the interviews that have taken place, the surveys suggest that there is a belief that the coaches knew and know what was going on 42% of the time, and the research would suggest that 22% of the time the coaches were actually involved.
Wow, that's insane. And do you believe, Dr. Mangus, that, you know, hazing on sports teams or even just, you know, on college campuses, high school campuses, that it is, you know, some form of bullying?
Oh, I think there are a lot of parallels between the two, because the person who has been victimized by the hazing or by the bullying is physically accosted in some way. They may be verbally insulted. They may be asked to do things that are degrading to them. They may have been kept away from the group at large. So there are many, many consistencies between the two. I think the difference is that the hazing is something that typically, the pledge, the one who wants to join, is a volunteer in that, whereas the person being bullied has not volunteered to be harmed or to be hurt.
When it comes to hazing going too far and, you know, a death or serious injury is involved, are there telltale signs or factors that lead up to the tragedy where it could have been stopped well in advance?
I believe there are, and I believe that some of those certainly involve whether or not in the past other people have been harmed or there have been complaints made against the fraternity, the sorority, the group at large. If there have been alcoholic beverages that are a part of the pledging hazing process, that will increase the likelihood of harm or perhaps death. I believe that when the hazing has resulted in someone being, you know, physically hospitalized or in some way physically harmed, that those are all indicators that something untoward, something unexpected could occur.
Is there enough being done, in your opinion, Dr. Mangus, about curbing hazing rituals? I know there are laws in certain places, but is enough being done? Is it taken seriously enough?
I believe that there are laws in all but two states, and I believe that would suggest that there is mindfulness about the bad outcome of hazing. And many campuses have banned fraternities, and I don't know about sororities, but I know specifically fraternities, where the hazing has gone overboard. And I believe that there is needed a constant monitoring. And again, the leadership of any group that is involved in hazing must be vetted for their being aware of how their rituals might be long-lastingly harmful to their pledges.
Do you think in the long run that maybe the practice of hazing will phase itself out, or is this always going to be something that, you know, people are going to have to deal with for generations to come in some form or another?
Yeah, I don't think it'll phase itself out. I think there's always a group mentality where a new person needs to prove their loyalty and their fidelity to the group, and depending upon the leadership and their sensitivity, the ways in which that loyalty and fidelity is assured has to be monitored. But I think it'll continue.
Okay. And what's your advice, I guess, to, you know, people that are listening right now who may have kids that are trying to join this, that, or something else? And, you know, like, is there something that they can do maybe to prevent it or help their kids, or even if it's the kid themselves that's listening right now? Because just like bullying, where a lot of people don't want to get involved and they let the bullying go on, is there something maybe that can be done where people can stand up and say, no, we're not going to accept this?
I think there are some steps, and certainly a parent with a child would be helped to share with that child that a group may want them to do something that would be embarrassing to them or to be harmful to them, and that the child needs to be supported in being respectful of themselves and their own thinking, their own intuition about whether or not the rituals that they're asked to participate in are or would be harmful to them in the long run. And I think that the parent has the responsibility of identifying what some of those things might be. And there are three kinds of bullies. There is the physical bully, as in the playground bully who will bloody your nose. There's the social bully who will want to try to ostracize you. And then there's a self-bully. And the self-bully is the worst because they don't need an audience. The same thing happens with hazing, that there are groups that would want to exclude you and those that would want to include you. And to the extent that the person who is willing to be disrespectful to themselves will put up with hazing that's over the top is the thing that has to be cautioned against. And a parent can do that in the privacy of their home and respect that child's thinking and help that child to think through what might be over the top.
Dr. Mengus, thank you so much for your time today and your insight. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me, Kelly.
That's forensic psychologist Dr. Ken Mengus. Again, make sure to check him out, drmengus.com.
Capture your need for sound.
The warm weather has arrived, and that means the summer movie season is upon us. To give us an idea about what movies we need to check out and avoid for summer 2012 is CNN and Fandango movie critic Gray Drake. Gray, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hello, I've got my cocktail in hand with a little umbrella in it. It's summer, loving it.
You are ready to rock. Well, I wanted to actually get, I guess, sort of like an overview out of the way. Like, before we get into the nitty-gritty of what films are coming out or are already in theaters, do you think that summer 2012 will go down in history as a strong season for movies?
Very much so. I think this is going to be a huge summer. And the reason for that is because there's so many highly anticipated movies coming out. They're really packed tightly. And, you know, I'll also give a slight nod to our Christmas season coming up, which is going to have The Hobbit. But this, when we're talking hot weather movies, that's okay. So many superheroes. We have so many aliens that I can barely keep them all straight.
Well, then I will commence you with the Avengers, because that has been the big boom that happened, you know, at the beginning of the month. And it's already brought in over $1 billion with a B. And so, you know, what are your thoughts on it? And for people, I guess, who are not comic book fans, because I've actually had a bunch of people say to me they are scared to go see it because they just think they're not going to get it.
Oh, no. See, now that's I'm really happy you brought this up. For everyone who has that fear, the reason that The Avengers has made so much money worldwide is because it speaks to everybody. Now, I actually don't know anything about the comic books past what the previous movies have told me, because I have seen all of those. But even if you haven't seen those films, The Avengers stands on its own, and it's such a positive, fun action movie that actually is funnier than most of the comedies that have come out this year. Like, we could do an entire show on how much I love The Avengers. I've seen it twice, and that never happens.
Wow. And did all of the actors, I guess, in, you know, The Avengers bring their A-game? And are we in for more of these ensemble movies? Or, you know, is each of these characters going to break off and do their own thing, like has been done with the Hulk and with Iron Man?
I think that we're going to see both. I think that we are going to... They finally figured out how to do the Hulk, thanks to Joss Whedon's writing and Mark Ruffalo's acting. So there are rumors of a television show in the works now to kind of remake that TV show. There's talks of him having his own movie, making it the third Hulk movie. And there's going to be... You know, we can probably expect sequels to all of the individual films, but we're definitely seeing Avengers 2. The only question is director-writer Joss Whedon going to do it again? Because this one nearly killed him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, he just worked so hard. He put his entire soul into this movie. And you could see in his interviews that he was doing for the movie, like, he's tired. And he needs a rest. But, of course, Hollywood needs this thing yesterday. So they're trying to convince him to come back fast. And that's actually sequel death. You know, the faster that a studio wants to put it out, the worse it's going to be. So I really hope they take their time. I hope that they give Joss a really nice 2 or 3 month holiday. But I mean, honestly, I can't wait to see a new one. Like, I'm already excited.
Okay. And how did you feel that the actors did? I know you spoke about Mark Ruffalo. So were we good with all of them?
They're fantastic. There's not a weak link in the chain. The script allowed each character to get equal screen time. And even if some people didn't appear as much as others, it's quality over quantity. There's just so many good things to say about this movie. With the best one being that it made me remember why I used to love action comedies. It's been such a long time since we've seen a film that not only has great action, but is really patriotic for America. It's really funny, and it has a lot of good, real conflict in it. I mean, this movie just has everything. Do you have another, like, hour and a half for me to talk about?
All right, I'm going to steer you another way. Joining us on the show right now is Gray Drake, movie critic for CNN and Fandango. Now, again, obviously a hard act to follow, especially because you've just, you know, spoken so highly of it. But what other movies, I guess, are highly anticipated this summer?
Well, there are a lot of good movies that are coming out, luckily. Now, Avengers ruled May, but the rule of diminishing returns is the superhero's only weakness, because it just stands to reason that it's going to fall out of first place and be forgotten by the end of the summer, but it is going to stick around through the summer, trust me.
Okay.
So what else is coming out? Actually, this weekend coming out in the U.S. is Men in Black 3. Now, if I do my movie critic math, which admittedly is not great, my calculations say that Men in Black has the ability to take over the number one spot this week.
Wow.
Because Avengers, last week it made $55 million, and that was down 50% from the week before and the week before. So if you discount another 50%, okay, which is what I love when I'm shopping at sales, that means that Men in Black just has to make about $30 million. And it'll take number one. And I really think it has a shot because people are excited to see Will Smith again in a summer movie. And Josh Brolin as Tommy Lee Jones is spectacular. So I think it's really going to do well.
Now, have you seen it yet or no?
I did see it, actually. I had the pleasure of seeing it.
Okay.
And I loved it. The second one was a train wreck. Like, don't go back and rewatch them, because only the first one is good. And the third one recaptures the magic of the first one, and it was really exciting.
Okay, and then I have to ask you this then. I know you said you're happy with it. Is Will Smith back? Is he a powerhouse again?
He is. He's so funny and charming, just like before. And the humor in it feels maybe just a touch dated, but the movie kind of focuses on time travel, so I'm going to excuse it. Like, it's not, Will Smith still has just enough, just charm, just forever, for days on end. I think Men in Black 3 can do really well, but there are tons of other superhero movies coming out this summer that people can look forward to.
Are you speaking of Dark Knight?
That is the big one. That is the one that I think most people kind of have in their mind as in the forefront, right? Now, over at Fandango, we surveyed a whole bunch of folks, and Dark Knight was right next to Avengers in their most anticipated movies of the summer. And that's because this is the third movie in the series done by Christopher Nolan, starring Christian Bale, and he's never disappointed us. In fact, the movies keep getting better. So I really hope that this one follows that rule.
And is this the end for him?
It is.
It's the
last one.
Okay.
And they're done. And that does not mean that Hollywood is done. They will probably try and reboot it again, but they have a lot to live up to because Christopher Nolan is just a spectacular filmmaker. Those movies hold up so well. I just watched Dark Knight, the second movie, on a plane the other day, and man, a plane ride has never gone so fast.
Okay, so it's still standing up, and then this one, you're expecting great things.
Very much so. I think it's going to be fantastic. The only thing that stands in its way, as far as box office growth goes, is just a couple weeks before that, The Amazing Spider-Man is coming out.
Oh, right.
Exactly, but you had forgotten, and so have most people, because Spider-Man number 3 was only 5 years ago.
Right.
Now, to be fair, those movies are train wreck. They're not very good. Like, the first one is good, the second one is not so good, and then the third one is laughable. So it makes sense that they would want to reboot it. They showed critics a 10-minute extended trailer, and the response was really underwhelmed. They were very underwhelmed. That's not the response that you want as a studio going into the summer with a huge movie that it's almost like the fate of your studio rests on it. Sony has a lot going on Amazing Spider-Man money-wise, and this movie has to do well.
And have you seen it or no?
No, I haven't seen it, and no one has. We've only seen that extended trailer, and I'm very meh about it. And meh translates in critic speak to I don't care.
Which is obviously not good.
Yeah, I don't really care about this movie. There's only one good thing about it, in my opinion, so far.
Is it Emma Stone?
Okay, I'll give it 2. Hold on. One good thing is Andrew Garfield,
okay,
starring as Spider-Man, who is charming and adorable, and he loves Spider-Man so very much. So I think that bodes well. The second thing is that I think that the effects that Spider-Man requires are much more advanced and easier to come by now than they were back, 12 or so years ago when we saw the first Spider-Man. So it'll probably look good. I'm just hoping that Andrew Garfield's charm and just boyish amazingness is going to win everybody over.
And Emma Stone's in the movie too, right?
She is. She plays not Mary Jane Watson, but whatever other chick Spider-Man was hanging out with.
Okay. And do you think she will do anything with the movie, or just not really a big part for her?
No, this is a big deal for Emma Stone for sure.
Okay.
And the last time we saw her, she was taking every single award show by storm with her role in The Help. So Emma Stone can do anything, and I think that Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield's real-life romance will probably translate really, really well on the screen. So it's going to be, like, fun for people to watch because there will be a lot of chemistry.
Joining us on the show, as per usual, is Gray Drake, a movie critic for CNN and Fandango. Now, we've talked a lot, obviously, about these big summer blockbusters. Are there other genres out there that we should be on the lookout for? Like, are there comedies that should really make us laugh?
Absolutely. You know, there's an animated movie coming out by Pixar who has never disappointed me, even with their most disappointing films, Cars and Cars 2. They're releasing a movie called Brave, and it's about this adorable ginger-haired Irish girl. and then she's the heroine. That's really rare to see these days in film, and I'm really excited for that one. It looks like a lot of fun, and Pixar always delivers.
Okay. And then I wanted to ask you this. I think it's out already, but I don't know, but I think it is. The What to Expect When You're Expecting. And I haven't really heard great things overall about it. Is this true?
Oh, God, this movie was terrible. I love chick flicks. I have a uterus. And this movie should have been made for me. But as it was, I thought that all of the characters were terrible. I thought that they were awful human beings that shouldn't be allowed to reproduce. And the only character in it that I could really attach to was Elizabeth Banks, who I thought brings exactly what she brings to normal to other movies, which is beauty and a sense of humor and honesty and like a real love for the character that she's playing, no matter who it is. And besides her, the rest of the movie was a complete waste of time. I just sat there with my arms crossed, literally waiting for my period to start.
Wow, that bad. And they had a lot of expectations for this, right? Like, you kept hearing about this all last fall, like, oh, this movie, oh, this movie.
Yeah, and you know what? Anytime that you get a movie in it that has, like, 10 of the biggest stars, that's straight from the Gary Marshall School of Filmmaking when he directed Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve. And guess what? Just because you have a ton of stars in your movie doesn't make it automatically good. I thought the script was bad. It was adapted from the nonfiction book about pregnancy, but of the same title, and they really missed the mark. I just thought I couldn't stand it. I thought it was awful. It makes me angrier and angrier the more I think about it.
And just, I do want to get you off this because I don't want you too angry at me, but I wanted to ask you, for people who, you know, because you just, again, spoke about, you know, all these big celebrities that were in the movie. For people who don't know, can you just list off the big stars just to prove the point that it doesn't matter that you had the A-team and it didn't work?
Absolutely. I mean, the stars in this movie are generally ones that I really enjoy watching. You've got Cameron Diaz, J-Lo is in it. Rodrigo Santoro, who played the King in 300. He was in one of my favorite movies, Love Actually. Dennis Quaid is in this movie. Chris Rock is in this movie. Matthew Morrison from Glee. The list goes on. I didn't even name them all.
Wow, and it tanked.
And it didn't do very well because it's not a good film. And I will welcome any comments or from women who saw this movie, who have children or who are currently pregnant, who think this movie is amazing. I am neither one of those things, although I felt like, once again, just sisters, man. Like, I should have loved this film, and I really didn't. I didn't think it was that funny.
Now, I wanted to ask you about this as well. It's been out for a little while, and I know there was high expectations. I know Entertainment Tonight, for goodness sake, spent like a whole Saturday show basically on this movie, Johnny Depp's Dark Shadows. And I feel like if Entertainment Tonight is using the whole show, like, you would think something's up with it. But how did you feel about it? Like, I don't really think it's performing.
That's a slow news day over at ET,
yeah.
Huh? Dark Shadows is exactly what Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was in my memory, which is a fantastic performance by Johnny Depp, because he's always fantastic. Even if he's in a crap movie, he's always great. But Dark Shadows never picks a direction to go. It isn't too much of any one thing to succeed. It's not too funny, not too campy, not too scary. There's just a whole bunch of random mishmash of things thrown together. And it has gorgeous set design. It looks awesome. There's some funny lines in it, but ultimately, I think the real problem is the production value was too high and the camp factor was too low. Like, I want to see that movie. I mean, for crying out loud, the way they advertised this film was with a Barry White song on the trailer. It was like every 70s top 10 hit you could think of. And he's Johnny Depp. He's wearing white makeup. He's biting people on the neck. We're listening to Barry White. That means your movie is funny and campy and stupid. And yet the movie itself didn't have that much of it. I was very confused and I was disappointed because it should have been better than it was.
And just a question as well, because I'm a huge Michelle Pfeiffer fan and I haven't seen her in a while. And so I know she was back in this. Just in her role, how did she do?
Michelle Pfeiffer in this film was very underused.
Okay.
Just like everyone else. Helena Bonham Carter, for crying out loud, is in this film. And Chloe Grace Moretz, all of these great actors. Johnny Lee Miller, good to see him again. But they're all underused because the script never gave them enough time to actually be a real character. And I think that the box office take sort of echoes my opinion, because it came out the week after Avengers, trying to capture a slightly different audience, and it didn't do very well. It still made about $30 million, which was, I think, what they were projecting for it, but ultimately it's not going to be this gigantic cash cow because people aren't going to ever see it again.
Now, I want to ask you about this, and I'm gonna stake my life on the line here and just put it out there, and then you can either make fun of me or agree with me. I actually liked Battleship. I went to see it. I had to do the premiere for my radio station, and I kind of stuck around for the perverse reason of wanting to see how much Rihanna would suck. And and I have to tell you, like, again, obviously not an Academy Award winning performance from her, but for her first foray, I thought she did okay. Like, she did not overact. She sort of played this, you know, like, she played her role well. Like, she was a little bit aggressive, which she needed to be, you know, being this Navy person. And it was fine. Like, I kind of forgot that it was her when I was watching, which I think is good. And then overall, like, yeah. And then overall, like, I mean, the script was slightly weak, some cheesy 80s action dialogue. But overall, like, the special effects were crazy. There was sort of a good marriage between that and you know, the script. And I liked how they snuck in some actual battleship board game references without you even knowing until the scene was over. Like, I was like, oh my God, that was a reference. So
I actually completely agree with you.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
I thought it was brilliant the way they integrated the game into the movie, even though it was only for like 3 minutes in the scheme of things.
Right.
But it was fun. It's like this movie is like a $2 bottle of wine. It ain't great, but it gets the job done. Right?
Yes.
Like, it's not the worst movie. It's basically like my instructions to people when they ask me if they should see Battleship. I tell them, buy the biggest bucket of popcorn you can afford, turn your brain off, and shut up.
Nice. Perfect. I love that.
That's basically it. That's the secret to enjoying stupid summer movies straight from to you. And I think Battleship is totally an example of that. I love Taylor Kitsch. I loved Rihanna. I loved how random it was in the beginning when they're trying to set up his character as a, you know, a wily kid with a good heart that gets into too much trouble. Like, I liked all of it. I thought it was, and by the way, I think Battleship has an awesome last 30 minutes. It made me proud to be an American. I'll tell you what, I was like, go Navy, woo, yay! I loved it. Because I actually had to see it in London.
Oh, okay.
And seeing it in a different country with the British standing up and cheering and clutching, literally clutching their head and moving around in amazement. Like, that is a good film.
Fantastic.
People are having fun at this movie, man. People, everybody agrees with you.
Awesome. Now I have to ask you about this. Rock of Ages, Tom Cruise, Alec Baldwin, Russell Brand, Mary J. Blige, the list goes on and on. How do we feel about this?
I feel excited because I love that music. I think the musical is great and hilarious, and I want to see Tom Cruise do anything. He's the last of the great movie stars. You know, like, we don't have many of them left.
Right.
And Tom Cruise doing anything is awesome to me. I think that he's super talented, and he's making really interesting choices. Like, his role in Tropic Thunder, when he was basically unrecognizable. I mean, he's such an interesting dude. He continues to entertain me. So Rock of Ages, like, I'm actually really excited to see it.
Now, biggest flop of the summer.
God, that's a great question. I really hope it's not Spider-Man, man. I really feel like it might just be Spider-Man.
Okay.
And that makes me so sad. But there's another movie coming out that I don't think is going to do nearly as well as people are anticipating. That's coming out here soon, and it is called Piranha 3DD. Now, the first Piranha 3D that was a remake of all the other Piranha movies that came in the 70s and 80s, that movie was a level of genius that is not normally achieved. Okay, it's like so gory, weirdly beautiful, gratuitous nudity, 3D, like, that movie hit on so many levels. It was spectacular. I was a huge fan of that movie. So I was really, really excited about Piranha 3DD. I am nervous now that I've seen clips. I don't think they're going to recapture the magic, and I think it's going to be something that, you know, anybody who was treated to the joys of the first one, I think they're going to be disappointed with this one, and that makes me really sad, because I like naked girls just as much as the next guy. I'm not made of stone. Come on.
Oh,
that's
great.
What we want to see in our exploitation films. Am I right?
Exactly. You go, girl. Now, before
Thank
I let you.
You
go, I have to ask you this. Out of everything that is going to be coming our way, you know, this summer, or has already sort of started coming our way with Avengers and so on, is anything in your mind going to get rewarded in award season?
Boy, let me tell you this. If the Academy is not known for having their finger on the pulse of society, okay? It's a bunch of old guys sitting around voting for movies that they didn't actually see in a theater. Having said that, that's why people hate the Oscars, because they're really out of touch. And if Avengers does not get a Best Picture nomination from the Academy, I am going to drive over to the Academy of Arts and Sciences. I'm going to punch someone in the stomach.
Gray, you are awesome. I have to tell you, you always make me laugh, and that is perfect. I want to thank you for your time today. Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure, and I'm so, let's go see Rock of Ages together.
We shall. I'm going to make my flight down to LA for sure. That is okay, CNN and Fandango movie critic Gray Drake.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
As the weather gets warmer in many parts of the world, it inspires people to be outside doing all kinds of things, including firing up the grill. And because May is National Barbecue Month, we definitely need to chat about what luscious creations can be cooked up on the backyard barbecue. To help give us some great ideas and tips on barbecuing is About.com's barbecue and grilling guide, Derek Riches. Derek, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, great. It's good to be here.
Derek, now you've tested a lot of grills over the years. What should, you know, we be on the lookout for in a quality grill, and what should we avoid?
Look for simplicity is the first rule, I always say. Anymore, manufacturers are putting so many extras on grills. All sorts of gadgets and gimmicks, and many of them you'll never actually use or really even need. And that just means that something else is going to break or it's going to ruin your grill. So go simple and go small. There's very large grills out there. If you don't need a big grill, don't spend the money on one. Get something simple, get something basic, something that's going to work. As far as the quality goes, look for solid construction. The best way to tell is to lift up the lid and try and twist it a little bit. Give it a shake. You know, walk all around it. If you're putting your money down on it, then you should be able to kick the tires and kick them pretty hard. So, you know, look for solid construction. Look for heavy materials.
Now, for our listeners who live in apartments or condos or maybe just don't have the space for a large backyard barbecue, what's the best grill option for them?
Well, you know, there's been a lot moving in this direction in the last few years. Gas grill manufacturers, many now make very small, about 300 square inch cooking area, two burner gas grills. So if you can have gas where you're at, these are nice. Typically the side tables will fold down. It'll take up an area about 2 feet by 2 feet. So it makes for a very good option. Many of them are good quality grills, so you can get the full experience. Aside from that, there's a lot of great portable grills out there that'll run on gas, charcoal, or electric now. So the options are there. If you want it, you can get it.
Now, when it comes to, I guess, gas versus charcoal, do you have a preference, Derek?
Well, I am a charcoal person by nature. For me, charcoal has a better flavor and it has a better experience. I mean, if you're going to go out and do the cookout, firing up the charcoal, having that smell, that kind of authentic fire, to me, it makes a much better experience and it produces better food, in my opinion. But, you know, you do have to say that gas is much more convenient. Modern gas grills are just like your indoor cooking appliances. They're reliable and easy to use, and they're very predictable. So if you don't want to invest the time with charcoal, gas is your option to go with.
And what do you tell people, Derek, and I'm giggling just because it came to mind, a friend of mine with regards to charcoal grills. She was always afraid when she was going to light it up that she was going to singe off her eyebrows. So what do you tell people about being safe around the charcoal grill and firing it up?
Well, you know, the old traditional, pour the charcoal in, throw in a gallon of lighter fluid and light it on fire. You know, you just don't have to do that anymore. There's a lot of different ways to actually light charcoal. Everything from small paraffin cubes that just slowly burn and get your charcoal lit to electric starters that you can just plug into an outlet, set down in the coals, and we'll have them burning in a couple of minutes.
Now, in your experience for families with young children running around, are there grills or barbecues that should be avoided, you know, having until the kids are a bit bigger, or do you just need to constantly be monitoring the situation?
Well, you know, it's best to keep an eye on it. This is where your placement is really important. Don't put your grill, you know, in a traffic area. Put it, you know, away from where people are going, where they're running around, so that it's less likely to be bumped into. Aside from that, you know, when you're looking at a grill, see if you can topple it over. That's going to be your biggest, you know, your biggest concern. So, you know, a good solid grill that's going to stand up and not get knocked over or, you know, can't be upturned that way is something to really look for. And, of course, you know, just keeping an eye on it.
Joining us on the show is barbecue expert and backyard chef Derek Riches. Check him out for sure on the website, bbq.about.com. We hear so much about special diets, Derek, and healthy cooking. I guess it depends, you know, exactly what you're grilling, but how healthy is barbecuing?
Well, you know, the biggest concern with grilling is cooking at very, very high temperatures. Charring on meats in particular can form carcinogenic substances. So you want to avoid overcooking. On the other hand, because you're dealing with an open surface, grease is literally allowed to drain away from it. Grilling is actually a lower fat option. You don't have to use a lot of oil on things, and a lot of the fat from meats are going to drain away. So, you know, I think that it's, you know, if you're doing it correctly, it's actually a very healthy way to go.
Okay, and then just to reiterate, though, very important to not get that charring substance on it, though.
Yes, don't burn your food.
Okay.
That's kind of the way to go.
Okay. Now, I think a lot of people get intimidated when they have to head off to the butchers, especially if they don't really have an idea about the way the cut of a meat should go. And then I think some people get scared by the price range and stuff like that. How can we choose the right cut without breaking the bank when you go off to the butchers?
Well, you know, the first thing is to have a good relationship. Talk to the butcher. Talk to them about what you want, what you're looking for. You know, it's their job. They know what they're dealing with, and they can typically point you in the direction of something that's going to be good and not too expensive. There's, you know, when it comes to meats, there's a lot of great options. You know, one of my favorites is to look for a good chuck steak or a chuck eye steak, which is lower in price. It's not as tender as like a beef tenderloin, but it's got a good flavor to it. And if you just marinate it for, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, it's going to be tender and it's going to be very flavorful.
And actually, a question I would have for you about marinating, does that actually help you when it comes to not overcooking the food because it's already moist? Like, should that give you a good start or does that not even come into play?
Well, you know, as I was saying about the formation of these carcinogens on meats, some studies have shown that marinating meats before you grill them can reduce the formation of these carcinogens by as much as 95%. So I say always marinate. And it doesn't really have to be that complex. You know, the easiest way to marinate something is a bottle of Italian dressing. Just coat that over the meat, let it sit on there. Even 20 to 30 minutes is perfect before you put it on the grill.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, and that's a quick way to get her done if you're trying to marinate. Okay. Now,
yeah.
I think a lot of people, you know, I guess the standard when you think about barbecuing, even though I know a lot of people go above and beyond, is the old reliable hamburger. But I know a lot of people, you know, with all the chefs out there and all the brilliant ideas that sort of come forth, I don't think it's just about the tomato and the lettuce and the pickle anymore. So in your, I guess, opinion, what makes an awesome gourmet burger?
Well, you know, I'm kind of a purist when it comes to burgers. I like it real simple, but, you know, you can do literally anything you can think of. One of the things that I do that people really seem to love is just to stuff a burger. What you do is you make very, very thin hamburger patties. Put whatever you want to stuff in there. Blue cheese is great. Put a second burger patty over top of it. These are very thin and very small. And then just kind of form it together into a patty. Put it on the grill. You have that nice melted blue cheese right in the center of it. You can put some bacon in there. You can put anything you want in there.
Now, should people be adventurous, Derek, and try grilling food maybe outside their comfort zone, like, I don't know, cedar plank salmon or something?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's so much you can do, and there's so much information. There's so many great books out there these days. You can grill virtually anything, and I think that, you know, the sad thing is we go out, we buy these grills, and we don't use them that often, and it's just sitting there, and it should be an invitation. You know, whatever you're trying to make, just think about, you know, how can you grill this?
Okay.
There's just so much you can do.
And speaking of grills, I know, you know, immediately people think right away of the meat, like that's, you know, what the grilling is all about. But so many of us, I think, enjoy grilled vegetables. So is there any tips with regards to grilled vegetables? Because maybe there's some that hold up better than others when it comes to grilling.
I don't think there's a vegetable I haven't figured out how to grill yet. But, you know, the great thing about grilling vegetables is you can do it very simply. You can do it very quickly. And that is the answer, is to keep it really quick and simple. You know, for instance, one of my things is I'll just take asparagus, I'll cut off the ends, soak it in some cold water for about 15 minutes, and just throw it straight on the grill, and just roll it around until it just starts to wilt, and then take it off. You can do that with virtually any vegetable. With softer vegetables, like squash or things like that, just lightly brush with a little olive oil, throw on some salt and pepper, whatever seasonings you like, put it on the grill. As soon as it starts to get some brown marks on it, you want to flip it over and take it off, you know, when it's cooked.
Is there a special way, Derek, to barbecue brochettes? Because I know that, you know, you've got the combination there where you have either cubes of chicken or pork, and then it's mixed in with the grilled vegetable, which obviously in my thoughts, even though I'm not an expert on this at all, I would think the vegetables grill fairly quickly, quicker than that meat.
Well, you know, that is kind of an issue, is that you get different cooking times altogether. So you kind of want to stick to thinner vegetables or vegetables that you don't matter as much how well cooked it really is. I like bell peppers or onions, you know, red onions, things like that. If it's still got some crunch to it, it's, you know, it's good. So if it doesn't get cooked as completely, it's not going to be an issue. The problems with, I see people will string tomatoes on there. Well, they're just going to turn to mush by the time you get the meat cooked. And, you know, squash can have that same sort of problem. So, you know, one solution is to cook the meat and the vegetables separately.
Okay.
So just, you know, and then you can serve it all together.
Now, a friend of mine does this quite a bit. She puts, she's actually cooked potatoes, I guess, like on the grill. And I'm sure obviously a lot of people do this. She does the tin foil thing where I guess it's steaming. Is that something that you suggest and that people should try out?
Well, it's a really easy way to do it because you can just, you know, you can wrap up the potatoes and throw them on there and let them cook. And you don't really have to pay that much attention to them. Don't put them over too high of a heat because it will burn through. And, you know, if you have a really hot grill, you can actually melt foil. But I do lots of potatoes, and, you know, that's a quick and easy way to do it. Another way is to just slice them into thick wedges and throw them right on the grill. I make up grill fries like that.
Wow, that sounds awesome. I've never seen that. I'm going to have to try this out, Derek. Joining us on the show is barbecue expert and backyard chef Derek Richards. Again, check out his website, bbq.about.com. Derek, for listeners who have been, you know, barbecuing for a while, what's the key maybe to stepping up a backyard party when it comes to grilling and trying to be a little bit different?
Well, you know, if you're having a party, I would say make sure you're prepared first. Have everything ready to go. You know, if you're marinating stuff, have it all set aside so you don't have to spend so much time right there. And then other than that, you know, throwing stuff on the grill, people are just going to gather around. One of the things I love to do, and it's so simple and it's so easy, is to grill slices of pineapple. I'll just soak them with a little rum and a little brown sugar, throw them on the grill. When that rum kind of hits the flame, there's just that little flash of flare-up. People love it, and it's really quite delicious. Throw a scoop of ice cream on it. It makes a great dessert.
Wow. And what do you say, Derek, to people, you know, who are going out camping and maybe going to be doing their cooking actually over an open fire? Are there any tips there that people should be aware of to make sure they're cooking their food properly?
An issue with that is that it's hard to tell how done something is if it's too dark. Make sure you've got some light so you can get a good idea of how things look. And keep an instant read thermometer with you so you're making sure that you're getting your foods cooked through. You certainly don't want to end up with undercooked. You don't want to end up with food poisoning while you're camping.
Right. Okay. And is there anything this year that people should be on the lookout as, you know, a hot, you know, trendy backyard barbecue for 2012?
Well, you know, the big thing going on now is infrared grills. This has become there's a lot of different styles, a lot of different technology out there. Like with any other kind of grill, infrared grills can be either great or they can not be great. So, you know, make sure you know what you're looking for. If you want to go with infrared, which gives you that great, very high temperature cooking, you know, for searing steaks and things like that, you know, do a little research first.
Okay, fantastic. Derek, thank you so much for joining us on the show this week. I really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
That's barbecue expert and backyard chef Derek Richards. Again, go to his website, bbq.about.com.
Bring on the remix.
It's the boy you never told I like you. It's the girl you let get away. It's the one you saw that day on the train, but you freaked out and walked away. It's the plane you want to catch to Vegas. Things you swear you do before you.
is with Hit the Lights, the Yazito Radio Edit on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, thank you so much for enjoying the show with us this week. I want to give a big thank you to my guests, including Dr. Ken Mangus, Gray Drake, and Derek Riches. Now, on the show next week, we speak with lifestyle expert and author Christine Eisner on how to streamline your possessions and also re-energize old treasures that are important to you. Now, I want to leave you with your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Rosalind Carter. You have to have confidence in your ability and then be tough enough to follow through. Don't forget to follow us on our new Twitter account, Kay Alexander Show, also on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, and always check out the website, kellyalexandershow.com. Have a great week. You and I'll chat soon.